are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday, Tuesday, casual Tuesday, Wednesday, casual hump day, Thursday, casual Thurs, that's what we call it, and Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Friday, December 14th, 2018. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, it's Casual Friday, folks. Joining me, be the great Digby from the blog Hullabaloo. Also on the program today, the great Kindler from andykindler.com. I saw a tweet that said he was up like 4 hours ago, so I don't know what's going on. Also on the program today, Senate votes to end U.S. Yemeni involvement. Meanwhile, Yemeni combatants sign a truce. The Trump inauguration, it turns out, has a little bit of an investigatory problem. People are wondering, where did $50 million go? Meanwhile, Trump may get his shunt down after all as Congress members begin to filter out for Christmas vacation. I mean, holiday vacation. U.S. is holding 15,000 immigrant children as a seven-year-old in custody dies of dehydration. The Chief Justice of California's Supreme Court has walked away from the Republican Party. And Kushner, Christie, and Gingrich, all possible chief of staffs, hard to decide which one we want.
Gingrich. I want that just battle of narcissism.
Meanwhile, David Pecker, the publisher of the National Enquirer, has opened his safe, and that's not good for Trump. Just the most juvenile show in the world. Is Mike Pence a dead man walking? The Weekly Standard is just dead.
Oh, goodbye.
And
later.
Lawsuits force Betsy DeVos to apply an Obama rule which wipes away student debt for 15,000 students. Good start, but going to need to see a lot more of that. All that and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. It is Friday. We are headed into the Christmas season. We are, of course, here all next week, but then we'll be taking Christmas week off. The members of Congress are already starting to filter out. I don't know how that's going to work in terms of a potential government shutdown. We shall see. Apparently, Donald Trump was very upset about his meeting with Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer the other day. And something happened in the U.S. Senate yesterday that, as far as I know, has not happened before. The U.S. Senate, via the War Powers Act, voted 56 to 41 to limit the president's war powers in the executive branch's ability to send assistance and weapons to the Saudis in their assault on Yemen, and in an attempt, and it's late, and it's too late, obviously, but to end the massive suffering that's going on in Yemen right now. Something like 80,000, I think it is, maybe the number is slightly higher, children have died of starvation in Yemen. Just for a moment, contemplate that magnitude of suffering. To sit there and watch your child die of starvation, to have to make the choice, and there are pieces I've read about this. Which of your children are you going to allow to starve to death? Because you have no choice. You want to save one or you want to save two. How do you make that choice? 80,000 children have died. Not to mention the people who have died by bombs and by war instruments. And this was a relationship to this war that was started under Obama, the Obama administration. The Trump administration, of course, ratcheted up quite a bit. Some have argued from the Obama administration that it was an attempt to at least, you know, sort of, I guess, what you call constructive engagement. If we participate in some way, we'll have an ability to throttle their efforts. I'm a little bit skeptical of that, not just in terms of its strategic or I should say tactical value, but as to whether that was, in fact, the intent. I'm sure that may have been part of it. But the other part of it was, we're going to help you out here because we're making some inroads to a less hostile stance against Iran. And we are beholden to Saudi Arabia for any number of reasons, not the least of which that they have all that oil and they have a tremendous amount of money. So Bernie Sanders and I think it was Mike Lee.
Chris Murphy and Mike Lee.
Sponsored a bill under the War Powers Act. And it passed. And the number 56 to 41 is important because it suggests that this is durable enough to be maintained in January. Now, look, obviously, Donald Trump could veto this. And we know in the House, Paul Ryan and five Democrats, and obviously all the Republicans, not all. I mean, 18, I think, jumped.
Crossed.
Yeah, 18 crossed. But we're able to prevent a vote on the war Ro Khanna's resolution, similar resolution. Nancy Pelosi will have another bite at that apple in January, and I think my understanding is it might have to go back to the Senate at that point. Unless they can maybe adopt the exact same resolution. I'm not exactly sure how it works. Nevertheless, Donald Trump may veto it, but he does have a bit of a problem with the Khashoggi situation. And I think that may be why we saw what we did in the House. But anytime anybody tries to tell you that Paul Ryan was hamstrung, and that he was constrained by his political future, and et cetera, et cetera. And I don't know why you'd be talking to anybody who would ever tell you that. But if you find yourself in that situation, maybe at the holidays, just remind them that he didn't have to do this. Other than he has a black dying heart.
May I also just add really briefly, we talked about this yesterday, but here are the five Yemen Genocide Caucus Democrats: Jim Costa, Al Lawson, Colin Peterson, Dutch Ruppersberger, and David Scott.
And I hope you're prepared to donate heavily to their primary challenge, which is, I would imagine, already in the works, hopefully in those districts.
They're in pretty safe Dem seats, too.
Most of them are, as far as I know. Yeah.
What is their justification for voting to continue this war?
Colin Peterson said it was a tangent to talk about.
My guess is...
to vote for the farm bill.
Yeah. They're in areas where the farm bill is prominent. That's what I
Not Ruppersberger, though. He's in Maryland, and he's just a national security hawk.
There you go.
Cool. Thousands of starving kids. A tangent.
Right. Here's Bernie Sanders discussing the resolution that has passed yesterday in the Senate.
And it's a very important breakthrough. Both progressives and conservatives have made a profound statement that 45 years after the passage of the War Powers Act, 45 years later, finally, the United States Senate has come together to use that authority for the first time and say that the responsibility for war, the constitutional responsibility for war, rests with the United States Congress, not the president, whether that president is a Democrat or a Republican. And I think the historical importance of today is not only moving the United States out of that horrific war, but is having the country see that their elected representatives are about to take back their constitutional responsibility on the issues of war, one of the most important functions that the United States Congress has.
Yeah, and it's important to keep that in mind. I mean, regardless of what happens with U.S. involvement in Yemen, and I'm not convinced that it's wholly unrelated that the Senate made this move, and simultaneously in Sweden, the warring factions in Yemen — this is not the Saudi Arabia, but these are forces that are backed by Saudi Arabia. I imagine that they're not completely freelancing in this situation. Agreed to at the least a truce under UN auspices. But Sanders makes a good point here. This sets a precedent for that. Now, for the first time, the Senate has exercised or attempted to exercise this authority. And, you know, it's one of those use it or lose it type of situations. And this is a precedent. And particularly in a place like the Senate, where so much of their thinking seems to be ossified and in static, to have taken this turn opens the door, I think, to the Senate taking this action before 45 years pass. And, I mean, if we're lucky enough not to have a involvement in a war before then, that would be great. Unlikely. But this is good for the Senate as an institution. It's good for the country. And hopefully it will also help create pressure on helping the Yemenis people. And next up, really, what we should be doing is either paying for some type of aid, massive aid, or forcing the Saudis to do, or do both.
And the Emiratis.
All right, let me change things up a little bit. Remind you that one of today's sponsors is Skillshare. And the first 500 people who go to skl.sh/majority are going to get 2 whole months of totally free access to Skillshare's entire library of super quality online courses and tutorials. Skillshare is a vibrant online learning community that offers courses on everything from design to video editing, photography, business, technology, cooking, meditation, and everything in between. There are Skillshare courses for everyone. You'll have no problem finding courses that'll be useful to you in both your personal and professional life. Whether you want to sharpen your skills with something you already love doing, or you want to learn how to do something totally new, Skillshare has you covered. They have courses for entrepreneurs, courses on computer coding, web development, personal nutrition, learning new languages, Photoshop, you name it. I've discussed with you what my plan is for the Christmas break, some accounting classes. What was the other thing I was going to do?
Meditate.
I don't know about that, but definitely accounting. I did my knife cutting class. It's been good. It's a great way to learn stuff. I mean, this is I'm super psyched about this. Actually, you can get 2 entire months of free access to every single course offered by Skillshare by going to skl.sh/majority. Just think of everything you'll have at your fingertips for 2 whole months. Check it out, folks. If you find yourself, taking two of these courses a week, you get 2 months to figure it out. That's skl.sh/majority. I put a link underneath this video. I put a link in the podcast description. Check it out. Also, as you know, you spend 1/3 of your life in your sheets. This holiday season, a great time for a bedding upgrade for yourself. But frankly, it's a great gift for a loved one. This is a good gift for your kids. If they're like college kids or young people, a good gift. Because I can assure you, certainly when I was that age, my bedding I did not take very seriously. And I can only imagine, Jamie, why you're smiling. Because Brooklinen works directly with manufacturers and customers, they're able to offer 5-star hotel quality sheets that are affordable and easy to order. Plus, with over 20 colors and patterns, these sheets don't just feel amazing, they look great too. And their super fast shipping makes it so that you can get your holiday gifts right on time. I now have, I don't know, half a dozen different sets of sheets from Brooklinen. I think just everybody in the house now has it. And those of us outside the house, we don't need to get into that. But I'm extremely happy with Brooklinen, and I get them. They're the best sheets, the most comfortable sheets I've ever slept on. And now it's time for your upgrade. drum roll, please. Brooklinen has an exclusive offer just for Majority Report listeners. Get $20 off and free shipping when you use the promo code MAJORITY. At brooklinen.com. Brooklinen, so confident in their product that all their sheets, all their comforters, their towels, their duvets come with a lifetime warranty. The only way to get $20 off and free shipping is to use the promo code MAJORITY at brooklinen.com. That's Brooklinen, BROOKLINEN.com. Promo code MAJORITY. Brooklinen, these really are the best sheets ever. Check them out. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Digby. Want to remind you, we are now... Brendan, what's the number? 15. Are you serious? There's only 15 more seats left for the live. I am sorry, folks. I know I told you it would last to Christmas, but make that the... Wait, when is the equinox? Or is that in the 21st?
It's going to be gone by then, too.
Oh, gosh. Buy your tickets today.
Basically, just do it.
Just do it. Yeah, I don't even need to say anything at this point. 15 tickets left. You can show your support for this show and get extra content every day by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. Head over to majority.fm to get those tickets. Also, tickets left now for Michael's show. This
Indeed.
Is what happens.
Get them.
Come into the neighborhood. That's why the restaurants all cluster together, folks. There's a little tip. Because you can't get into one, you go and try the other one. That's the way it works. All right, folks. Quick break. It's true.
It is true. Or if you're a bon vivant, you just go to all of them.
Well, but then you know about them because
right.
you've gone to the one,
yeah,
the first one.
Cluster.
They act as advertising
Indeed.
For each other. Quick break. Come back with Digby.
Hey, honey, are you giving up?
We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report on the phone. It is always a pleasure to welcome our next guest from one of the earliest blogs I ever read. Back in the day, we would just sometimes you wouldn't even have to say things. You could just say, you didn't have to write anything. I mean, I would say half the blogs I read just avoided having to even post anything, because they would just say what Digby said. And then somebody wrote this.
Are you ready for some DB? Yeah.
There you go. Wow, that's the Digby theme song. Hi, Digby.
Hi. I love it. Thank you so much.
We didn't do it, but we invited people to do it. Who was the do we know?
Yeah, Matt? It was Hot Cologne.
Yeah, well, there you go. Hot Cologne did
Hot
the
Cologne.
Which totally makes sense. all right, so Heather, let's start with this. Is we are now, I mean, obviously the Yemeni stuff is hugely important. And I want to get your sense of that. but before we do, the other sort of ongoing sort of horror story is that now the United States government is now basically warehousing 15,000 kits, some of whom, I mean, I would say probably the majority of whom have come here without their parents. But the reason why we are housing them is because ICE is basically explicitly or implicitly threatening the relatives of these kids and are keeping them away from coming and claiming these kids and bringing them back home and waiting for some type of adjudication as to whether they have legitimate claims to stay in the country. This is just unbelievable. And now we have this story coming out of a this is last week. I think it was in New Mexico. A 7-year-old girl from Guatemala died of dehydration and shock. So she was brought in to the Customs and Border Protection facility at 10 p.m. on December 6th. She was part of a group of 163 people who walked up to U.S. border agents to turn themselves in, right? They're seeking asylum. This is the only way to seek asylum. You need to be in the country to actually legally request asylum. So people should be very clear about this. Eight hours later. Okay. I mean, you imagine that the first thing the Customs and Borders Patrol is going to do is assess the health of the children. And 8 hours later, she began having seizures. And emergency responders arrived. They measured her body temperature at 105, almost 106 degrees. She had reportedly not eaten or consumed water for several days. They took her to a hospital in El Paso by helicopter. Child went into cardiac arrest and died 24 hours, less than 24 hours later. I mean, this is an outrage. I mean, this is just unbelievable. And I want you, Digby, and I want to get your take on this. Here is Kristen Nielsen on Fox and Friends, and just listen to. I mean, this is just stunning to me. This is just stunning, and you know she is there calling Fox and Friends because we need to basically provide flack so that this story doesn't get out of hand. And this is just, I'll play the tape.
What do you know about this little girl, the 7-year-old migrant girl that was taken into Border Patrol custody and then died of dehydration and exhaustion?
Yeah, it's heart-wrenching is what it is. And my heart goes out to the family, all of DHS. You know, this is just a very sad example of the dangers of this journey. This family chose to cross illegally. What happened here was they were about 90 miles away from where we could process them. They came in such a large crowd that it took our Border Patrol folks a couple times to get them all. We gave immediate care. We'll continue to look into the situation. But again, I cannot stress how dangerous this journey is when migrants choose to come here illegally.
Yeah, I understand she had 105 fever, and you guys got her over to a hospital in El Paso. We're unable to save her life. Madam Secretary, tell us a little bit about the status of the caravan right now.
Yeah, look at that. Let's go quickly talk about the caravan. All right, I'm just going to quickly dispense with a couple of lies that we heard there. The 105-degree temperature happened 6 hours, 8 hours after she was in custody. The 163 people just handed themselves in, so they didn't need to be rounded up. And just the disgusting part of, like, my heart goes out to the family and all of DHS. Yeah, it's really hard on DHS here, I imagine. What do you say about this?
Well, I mean, it's absolutely horrific. And, this is an old story about the crossing through the dangerous parts of the desert down there at the border, which is what they are consciously doing to these people by, you know, creating all these roadblocks at the normal crossings, making it impossible for people to cross over and ask for asylum in the normal way. So basically, they're forcing, this is not going to be the end of it. It's not the first time it's happened. People absolutely die of dehydration out there in the desert. And by the way, the Border Patrol goes out. There are, you know, good Samaritans who go out and leave water and various, you know, sort of protective gear for these folks, and the Border Patrol will arrest them for doing that. This is intentional cruelty. And in this case, you know, as far as I can tell from the story, and forgetting that, you know, just absolutely reprehensible commentary from Kirstjen Nielsen, well, it's a very dangerous journey, right, and, you know, it's very tough, and we're very sorry. Well, you know, it's ridiculous. The Border Patrol certainly has resources to give these people water. Clearly, this little girl was dehydrated from wandering around in the desert. And, you know, it's obvious to me that they didn't give them water. I mean, if they had, it's highly unlikely she would have had 105-degree temperature hours after she'd been, you know, in Border Patrol custody. So, you know, I'm sure that this is maybe even uglier than we think. Look, you know, let's step back here a little bit and look at what's really happening. I mean, a lot of people thought that Donald Trump, when he came in, was going to be, you know, there may be many things, he's very ignorant, he's nothing, but at least he's not a war president. At least he's not somebody who's you know, invading countries that didn't attack us. And, you know, you go, well, you know, I guess that's an upside. But the truth of the matter is, he is a war president. And he's waging a war on the border of the United States of America. He's waging a war inside our own country, dividing people into, you know, it's this, I don't know, I can't remember who said it, but they're calling it, you know, like a cold civil war. And there are casualties and they're children. And it's not that different from the horrors that we're seeing over in another war that Donald Trump is helping to wage in Yemen. And I'm not, you know, trying to give, you know, where we're seeing the horror, even more horrifying pictures of little children starving and being the, you know, the targets of air raids over there. I mean, this is, you know, this is something that's happening. This is a violence that's being done right here in America. This little girl died in the United States of America. It wasn't, you know, someplace else. It wasn't even in her home country. We have, you know, we're being absolutely, totally lacking in compassion for the conditions that are making these people come up here, that are forcing these people out of their own countries to save their own lives, and we're making it more and more and more difficult for them to live. I mean, this isn't a matter of, you know, stealing jobs or, you know, some kind of an economic issue. I mean, that it really isn't. There's no crisis. We can handle a 7-year-old child. I mean, in this country, this is ridiculous. And then the fact that they're now housing them in basically in camps.
Yep.
And doing this, you know, they're doing stings on these kids' relatives, where they call and say, you know, come out and pick up so-and-so, and then they get them to come in, and then they arrest them and deport them.
Yep.
If the relative is undocumented. I mean, this is really nightmarish stuff, and you know, it's the holiday season. You know, you don't want to have to feel this way, but, you know, I mean, I find this just thoroughly, thoroughly depressing. I mean, it's just, this is just the worst, and I don't see an end to it. I mean, they'll get rid of Kirstjen Nielsen and put in somebody worse. That's what's
right.
actually going to happen.
Right. And you know, and we should say that these policies are not particularly new. We have footage of Border Patrol people dumping out water, and they've been doing this, you know, this, I think this footage is from like 6 years ago. Certainly it predates, the Trump era, but, it's sick. I mean, it's sick. And your point about, you know, look, you're not trying to sneak into the country with 163 people. When 163 right. people go up and, give up the ghost, they're not trying to sneak into the country. They're trying to turn themselves in. And so it is clearly one of those examples. And this is a stated policy, like you said, of the Trump administration, force them into the desert. And because theoretically it will discourage people from coming. But of course, the reality is that their situations are so bleak from where they're coming from that they will take this chance. None of the attempts, none of the family separation, none of that stuff in any way inhibited the flow of people coming north. And we should say it's not that many. We can certainly absorb these people, but it's just, I don't know, it's sickening. And
I think the point you make is really important, though. I mean, look, it probably has inhibited plenty of people. I mean, there are probably plenty of people who are going, this isn't really, you know, it's not really worth it for me to come over the border and work for a few months while all this wild political stuff's happening in the U.S. Okay, I mean, maybe there's some Mexican workers who are saying, I'm not gonna go through that right now. These are not those people. Who would do this unless you absolutely had to? Anybody who is marching, you know, walking on foot all the way from Central America
right.
to come to the border to try, and they're seeking their family members who are here, people that they know, people from their communities, from their country, and trying to survive. I mean, you would never do this. Who would do it unless you absolutely had to? I wish I could understand why Americans see these people as being such, you know, such venal, greedy, you know, kind of. I mean, Trump is even, by the way, this week, going on and on about how they're bringing diseases. I mean, they're back to
right.
that. I mean,
right.
you know, saying that there's all people don't want to talk about all the medical conditions and the diseases they're bringing in. I mean, that is really taking it to a new sick level. I think we all know what the illusion there is and how, you know, in the past that sort of thing has been used. And it's been used many times at the U.S. border, too. I mean, there was, I don't know if people know this story. I'll just digress for just a second because it's kind of interesting. You know, over the years, there have always been these crackdowns at the U.S., you know, at the American border with Mexico. And, you know, back in the 50s, they had Operation Wetback, which Trump on the campaign trail extolled as, you know, kind of a model for what he wanted to do, in which they rounded up everybody who looked like they were a Mexican, many of them American, by the way, and just dumped them out in the desert and left them there. People did die in that, too. That was our, you know, our good guy Eisenhower who did that one. But this goes way, way back. And in fact, there was a period in the early part of the century where this disease thing was really a big deal. You know, this was back during the eugenics time. And, you know, there was a lot of this weird sort of scientific, you know, quote, scientific racialized, you know, science that people were using.
And that's coming back, incidentally. But
yeah, it is. Yeah. And they used to bring you know, they would have Mexicans who crossed the border every day to work in, you know, in the fields or who worked in houses in the South, particularly in Texas, which is where this really happened a lot. And they insisted that they be deloused, right? They would round them up and basically forced them to, you know, take showers, and then they'd spray them with this powder. And there was a big riot that happened. One of the housemaids, they staged what was a housemaid's riot, and they rioted and actually ended up ending the policy because of it. It's a really wild story. You can look it up. But they used this powder on them. And you know what that powder was? It was a powder known as Zyklon B. And, in fact, it was America who used that compound first. And it was the Nazis who got the idea for it and used it for much more nefarious and, more concentrated purposes in the concentration camps, in the death camps in Germany and Eastern Europe. And, that's what they used to do. So there's a long history of doing this, but, that doesn't make it right. And, in fact, it makes it even more wrong. I mean, we used to exterminate Indians in this country, too. We had slavery. A lot of things need to end. And this border, this, ongoing kind of churning at our Mexican border has got to stop, too, because this kind of violence and unnecessary cruelty and absolute, lack of compassion when we don't have to do it. It's as if we kind of are wishing that we had the same kind of immigrant issue that they have in Europe, where they really do have an influx of people from the Middle East that, it's causing a lot of, social problems, rightly or wrongly, they do exist. That's not true here. We you go down to the Southwest or here in California where I live, there's no problem. I mean, it's not a problem. I mean, people come over from Mexico, they go back. They come from Central America, they go back. We absorb a lot of them. A lot of them just go and spend some time here, and then they want to go back to their families and their home country. It's not a big deal. We've been doing it for years, and there's no need for all this, angst over it. It's a made-up problem. And it's to keep the right wing. Honestly, I honestly think that a lot of it is just the right needed another racial group.
Absolutely.
To demonize.
Without a doubt.
They're picking on the Hispanics
because it
became unfashionable to be, blatantly racist against African Americans.
I think that's absolutely right. And we've seen the uptick in Islamophobia in this country. I mean, people don't realize this, but it went up. During anti-Muslim rhetoric and attacks went up since the Bush administration.
Yep.
And when you would have imagined it would have been at its peak, right? And I absolutely think that's what it is. This is there has been a strong anti-immigrant sentiment on the right. George Bush tried to shake it. And I think Trump realized this is a good group to hate on because we lost the gays. We don't have the gays to rely on anymore. That's what George Bush used in 2004. We'll talk about that in a moment, but we'll circle back around to that because there's you had a piece that was interesting about white evangelicals, and that that's what brought out the folks for George Bush was we're going to hate on the gays, right? We're going
right.
to have anti-marriage equality amendments and whatnot. One thing I will say is that broadly the support of immigrants in this country seems to have gone up.
Yep.
The depth of the anti-immigrant fervor has deepened, I think, right? I think for people who are anti-immigrant, that issue has risen up on their priorities in which they vote and they function in their life. But broadly speaking, support for immigrants has gone up in the country. And, and I want to use that to pivot a little bit to what's going on with the Trump investigations, because it's starting to broaden out so much now, the investigations. I think we're going to see sort of round two where we see a nexus with what's going on with Saudi Arabia and perhaps Israel and the UAE. And we're seeing it in terms of money laundering and this and that. And it remains to be seen. I'm highly skeptical that we're going to see sort of some new broader ethos, right, in our government and in terms of accountability for very wealthy people. But who knows? But, you know, Trump is, by making the implicit explicit, is forcing people to sort of make some hard choices and to look at this stuff where it was easier in the past. It just didn't get the same attention, frankly, I think. I don't know that people didn't pay attention to it as much as it just didn't get the same sort of media focus. It'll be interesting to see if in what we have seen with healthcare, right, where the protection of the ACA sort of made the imperative for a single payer system, a bigger structural change, more more relevant, evident. I wonder if the same thing's going to happen in terms of immigration. I hope so.
I hope so, too. You know, I mean, I feel like immigration, what may be happening is what happened in California. I hope that this that
exactly
happens, which is,
remind people of this, because
was
it Pete Sessions? What was it?
Yeah
okay.
It was Pete
Sessions?
Wilson.
Pete Wilson, sorry. Yeah, remind people of this, because that I was in California, I think, just after that.
Yeah, back in the 90s, Pete Wilson, and people may remember this, ran for governor, and he ran on a very hardcore, very Trumpish style anti-immigrant platform. And there was an initiative on the ballot as well to sort of, you know, deny public schooling and deny driver's licenses and basically make California a miserable place to live for undocumented immigrants. Now, you know, that's a lot of people in this state.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a very heavy Hispanic state. And he ran on that, and he actually won. I think it was 1994. And he actually won, and the proposition that was on the ballot also won.
Yep.
Very depressing time. We're just sitting there going, oh, my God. But what that did was, first of all, it galvanized the Latino community, the, you know, American Latinos in California. And they organized and became politically active. And I think it also, you know, did what is happening, I think, across the country, which is it made immigration a salient issue for a whole lot of people who really don't want to see 7-year-old girls dying of thirst in America. They don't want to see babies in cages. I mean, it's that kind of, they've taken it so far, as Pete Wilson did here in California, that other people who may just sort of go, yeah, you know, whatever, it's terrible, but, you know, I care about, I don't know, my taxes, or they have other issues that they find more prominence, it becomes a salient issue to them to vote on.
Yep.
And that's what it is in California. California now is completely intolerant of this immigrant bashing stuff. I mean, there's just no room for it in California politics. They're not doing it. I mean, of course, there's a pocket of, right.
The head
here.
Of the California State Supreme Court, the Chief Justice, just quit the Republican Party, and in part it was because of Kavanaugh, but largely it seems that it was also in terms of, like, all this anti-immigrant stuff.
That's right. People in this state are just not tolerant. It's not an acceptable thing here. And, you know, for good reason. I mean, look at, you know, this was Mexico at one point. So, you know, I mean, this is like, you know, this is one of those things where you see an evolution, where you see somebody take it so far. It's as you point out, right? I mean, they go to such a limit that people sort of wake up and go, hey, wait a minute, who are we? And, you know, I do see a lot of that, even among people who may not be particularly political. They don't like this. This thing with kids and these poor people. I mean, unless you have no compassion at all, just completely lacking in empathy, like Donald Trump, you're going to look at that.
Not just Donald Trump. I don't. Kristen Nielsen. I mean, I don't want to wish pain and suffering on her, but I hope that she has a very uncomfortable rest of her life. I hope she always is like a constant rash or something. I mean, this is someone, and I'm probably holding back. I probably have a little bit, a little more anger than that. But all right. Well,
let's just say this: I don't feel sorry for her having her dinner interrupted. Okay.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
I'm not going to lose any sleep over that.
It's such a shame that she can't go out to eat.
Poor dear.
All right. Let's turn to this. This week has been nuts in terms of criminal investigations. Michael Cohen has basically, and we'll play some more audio clips of him a little bit later. He is interesting figure, to say the least. But what is also really interesting, I mean, this week feels and I feel like we've said this before, but this week feels different in the sense that the structures around Donald Trump seem to be sort of like crumbling a little bit. And this clip that we have, and I want you to listen to it, it's long, but it really is fascinating. Judge Napolitano is on Fox and Friends, and that notion of the structure sort of full, this is like sort of like he's explaining that on some level, but it's also we're witnessing it as they all are just sort of slack-jawed as he's basically telling them like, yeah, Donald Trump really did something wrong here. And here's the segment. I love it. They start with a graphic of Lady to the Scales of Justice, and Fox outweighs Friends on the scale of justice. Just so that you know, I never noticed that, but that's pretty funny. And I don't know who that face is. That is a weird graphic. Anyways, so listen to this. We'll stop it. And if you want to stop it, just tell us when to stop.
President Trump's former lawyer, Michael Cohen, sentenced to 3 years in prison for tax fraud, campaign finance violations, and lying to Congress.
Cohen ripping into his former boss, claiming blind loyalty led him to a path of darkness to cover up Donald Trump's dirty deeds.
And he went on and on and on. Here to break it all down, Fox News senior judicial analyst.
He went on and on and on. Go ahead.
Yeah.
And he went on and on and on. Here to break it all down, Fox News senior judicial analyst, Judge Andrew Napolitano. Judge, Michael Cohen got off easy. 3 years, it's pretty good. He's got to be happy about that. What do we
Well, nobody is happy about going to jail, but it's a lot less time than the government wanted and a lot less time than we all thought he would get. Look, I've sentenced over 1,000 people in my career, and I've heard things defendants say. Sentencing today is essentially a mathematical function. You're checking boxes. You're complying with guidelines. Obviously, there's some room for deviation. And Judge Pauley, the judge in this case, gave Michael Cohen a substantial benefit. It's interesting. Remember, he was prosecuted
because
by
cooperation?
Correct. He was prosecuted by two offices. He was prosecuted by the special counsel in D.C. They wanted him to get no jail time. And he was prosecuted by the U.S. attorneys here in New York. They wanted him to get 4 years. Judge Pauley gave him three. But a very, very telling statement came out of the judge's mouth yesterday after he read all the documents and heard all the arguments from the government, prosecutors in D.C., prosecutors in New York, Michael Cohen and his lawyers. And that was about the president. The judge finding that the president ordered and paid for Michael Cohen to commit a crime. That is very telling.
What crime?
The intentional deception and failure to report campaign payments.
But so Donald Trump has said that was not a campaign violation because it wasn't involving the campaign. It was a damage control payment.
Unfortunately, the president wasn't in the courtroom, and the people who were, the federal prosecutors who had a statement from David Pecker, the guy that owns National Enquirer, said it was for the campaign. The prosecutor said it was for the campaign. Michael Cohen said it was for the campaign. The president wasn't there. Maybe he should have had lawyers there. So if you make an honest mistake in failing to report something, or if you take $100,000 and you're only supposed to take $2,500, you can correct that by returning the money, paying a fine, and correcting the report. If you do this as part of a scheme to hide it, then it's not a civil wrong, then it's a crime. That's what the judge found yesterday.
Well, if, like, for example, Reverend Wright is speaking out, making candidate Obama look bad, and someone walks up to Reverend Wright and says, hey, could you stop making the president, the senator look bad? He's running for president. But what does that have to do with the campaign? But yet it is that might influence how I vote.
Pause it 1 second. Did you hear that, Heather?
Jeez, what?
How desperate do you have to get at this point to bring up Reverend Wright?
And
to equate going up a random person not associated with the campaign, walking up to Reverend Wright and saying, hey, will you please be quiet? And it's stunning to me. The next thing they're going to ask is they're going to demand that Barack Obama be properly vetted and that Bill Ayers.
No doubt about it.
What about Bill
Lock
Ayers?
Lock him up.
But here is the judge. I mean, this is pretty funny. This is sort of like it sort of feels like I don't know, if you were to actually gather your children around and say, look, guys, there's no Santa Claus. But wait a second. What about who brought us the yeah, no, that was your uncle. He bought that. But wait, what about that time we heard the bells on the, yeah, no, that was just, that was our neighbor and they were just playing around. Here we go. Continue.
I influence how I vote.
That would not be a campaign.
So this is no difference. This is a negative story the president went out because he's running for president.
I understand the president's argument. Unfortunately, the court and the prosecutors who work for the president disagree with him.
Yeah, but they went after John Edwards for essentially the same idea because there was a money paid to a woman who he had an affair with and had a child. That went to court, that went to trial, and he was found not guilty.
The John Edwards case actually hurts the president because John Edwards' lawyers made a motion to dismiss the indictment saying it's not a crime. And the judge published an opinion saying why it's a crime. Now, the jury didn't believe the government and believed John Edwards. But the fact of the matter is any scheme to defraud the government by failing to report what must be reported is a crime, unless it's an honest mistake, in which
judge,
case it's not a scheme.
Does he have to serve all 3 years?
No, he'll have to serve 85%. But if the Criminal Justice Reform Act that the president wants, that Democrats want, that Republicans want, from Cory Booker to Rand Paul, passes, one-third of his time will be removed.
And he'll 2 years.
He'll be out in about a year and 9 months.
All right. Judge, thank you very much.
Pleasure.
Will he be able to practice law again?
No, I doubt he'll ever practice law again.
Who would
Brian,
hire
some
him?
People say he never really practiced law.
I've heard that.
And he owes a lot.
Oh, my gosh. That was really rough for the Fox and Friends. They... I feel like
poor
Judge
baby.
Exactly. I feel like Judge Napolitano, not a friend anymore.
Yeah, I'm afraid not.
But I feel like that moment, like how many of those moments, you know, look, these three guys, these three stooges on this couch are not that important. But there's like metaphorically speaking, that conversation is probably happening in people's minds or, you know,
yep.
Across the country on some level. I don't think a lot of these people are, in terms of voters and whatnot, are going to walk away for Donald Trump for that. But I have a feeling like people who, you know, flacks, like, I'll be very surprised if Chris Christie takes his job, although I could see him coming in at this point. Like, if you come in at this stage, right, you probably won't have to do anything criminal. You'll just watch it all fall around.
Yeah. He may see himself as Alexander Haig, right, the guy
right.
who came in the latter part of the Nixon administration and kind of oversaw the end.
Right.
Maybe he sees himself as that. You know, one thing I think is really important to point out about this what Napolitano said, and he kept saying this, but he didn't really explain it, that there was a scheme. You know, I think people have been up until now under the impression that Trump and Cohen and Pecker, after the Access Hollywood tape came out, and then, you know, Stormy shows up and Karen McDougal show up and they go, hey, you know, we're going to go public because this was all part of a big, you know, sort of churn of a lot of issues around women that were coming up towards the end of the campaign. And that Trump and Cohen and Pecker came up with this idea to pay them off, you know, and set up the shell companies and do all that stuff. Just to keep them quiet in, you know, until the election. Now, that would be illegal. Anyway, what they did, and we've heard Trump on tape basically talking about it, so we know that it happened and we know Trump was involved. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But what has happened in the last week is that we found out that this scheme was hatched back in 2015. This wasn't something that they came up with at the last minute. Everything was a flurry. It was the end of the campaign. Nobody knew what they were doing. They were doing this stuff since 2015. We don't even know how many other situations like this came up. Donald Trump called, and this was reported in the Wall Street Journal a while back, and now it has been confirmed, that what Pecker told the prosecutors, and Cohen confirmed, and I think there's documentary evidence, plus, you know, tapes and what have you, to back this up. Trump called Pecker in there in 2015. He's standing there with Michael Cohen up in Trump Tower and said, literally, this is the quote, "What can you do for my campaign?" You know, I mean, it doesn't get any more explicitly campaign related than that. And they came up with this idea that what Pecker would do was try and head off at the pass any kind of these negative information, particularly about women. But it says in the document, the press release, that it was also, among other things, we don't even know what else was
right.
coming up, right? I mean, that may have been some of this Apprentice stuff that has, you know, some's come out in recent days. Maybe it's drugs. Maybe, you know, who knows? I mean, I don't know. But, you know, and maybe it's some of it's bogus, too. You know, there may have been people there looking for a, you know, looking to make a quick buck by selling something to the Inquirer. But whatever, this thing was in place for, you know, from the very beginning of the campaign, August of 2015. Trump came down the escalator in June of 2015. So this stuff was going on. This was a scheme. It was an illegal scheme where they were trying to protect Trump by, you know, paying money to people who allegedly had negative information, and they weren't reporting it as campaign contributions.
Right.
That is illegal, and it's a scheme, as Napolitano says. It's not just something, well, gee, we were all, you know, so busy, we didn't really know what we were doing. I mean, no one can say that. That no one can say that somebody didn't have an obligation from 2015 on to go and ask Don McGahn, by the way, who was the campaign lawyer for Donald Trump from the very beginning, and who happened to be an election law expert. He's one of the leading experts in the Republican Party on election law. So nobody can say that there wasn't anybody around, they didn't know who to turn to, they didn't have any way of
right.
doing it. So, I think this is very, very serious for him because, you know, this is just one example
well,
of the kind of corrupt
right.
scheme that he was up to.
And I would imagine this is something that he's probably not going to have to worry about until the moment he steps out of the White House as not the president. And I think, you know, someone's going to come up and shake his hand and then slap a cuff around him or something.
Well, maybe, you know, I mean, one thing that we should, you know, I mean, God help us if we get into another one of these, you know, let's not look in the rearview mirror. We have to move forward and may have a, you know, enact our positive agenda. I mean, this is going
to
be a big
I find that
battle for a lot of us if they decide to do that. Oh, I wouldn't be surprised. You know, I really wouldn't. I mean,
All right. So, look, I want to, you know, we're going to see, I think there's going to be a lot more of this. I think they're starting with low-hanging fruit and then working up and sort of laying out like sort of a certain pattern of criminality and then are going to start getting a little bit deeper and stuff. But who knows? And, you know, I'm not convinced that the Republican lawmakers are going to diminish their support for him. All right. But we just have a couple of minutes left. But I want to bring this theory you have up because I think it's really interesting. There was polling that has recently been basically digested from the midterms that has an interesting lesson about who is supporting Donald Trump. But it is and you developed a theory about it that has to deal with Mike Pence. Tell us what the polling was and what the theory is, and people can go and read it. But I want to just get it out there so that people, you know, go and check out what you've written.
Well, I mean, I think, first of all, you know, remember the other day with the Chuck and Nancy Oval Office meeting, Mike Pence sat there, you know, like frozen, like a wax figure and didn't move.
I forgot
and there
was
there were all these memes, you know. I mean, it was kind of hilarious. But I actually think that it was sort of symbolic of maybe something that's going on with Pence. According to Gabriel Sherman over at Vanity Fair, the president's political advisors looking at 2020 came to him recently and showed him polling, which showed that Pence wasn't really bringing anything to the table, that as far as they could tell, he wasn't an advantage to Trump. And I think that they had always assumed that he would be one because of his evangelical background, that he could soothe the ruffled feathers of the Republican base who might be upset at Donald Trump's libertine ways. Well, as we know, they don't care. In fact, they actually seem to like him for it. So, you know, that has not been a problem. And Pence doesn't really bring anything to the table. So there has been discussion of perhaps replacing him with Nikki Haley. And there's a reason for that. And the reason is that while Pence doesn't bring anything to the table, because the evangelicals are solid. The exit polls from 2018 show that the white working class, particularly white working class women, but some white working class men as well, the non-evangelicals among them are falling away from Donald Trump. What that means is that the only people that are his base now, his solid base, are white working class, well, and some college-educated evangelicals, too. In other words, the evangelicals are his base. That's it. And you know, I don't mean to underestimate that. There are a lot of them in this country, and you know, some of them are a good 50%, from what we can understand, aren't really religious. They just sort of identify as evangelicals. So there are millions of them, particularly centered in the South. But what that means is that, you know, white working class women in particular who are not evangelicals are falling away. They're moving to, you know, they voted Democratic in 2018 in much larger numbers than anybody expected. So that's an opening for the Democrats. But it also means that Mike Pence has got a problem, and I would not be surprised to see him go. And that may sort of explain all this stuff that happened with Nick Ayers, which seemed really weird. Nobody understood why he only wanted a temporary assignment and why he didn't, you know, he ended up turning down the job and embarrassing the president and all of that. There may be within the, you know, within the White House, within the Trump orbit there, some issue with Pence, and you know, and we don't even know maybe you know what he they're looking into the inaugural now, and Trump was and Pence was in charge of the of the transition, so who knows where all that's going to. So anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there because I think that may be an issue, and you know, there may be something happening under there that isn't, you know, exactly obvious. And in fact, it ends up being sort of good news for the Democrats, because white working class women are a constituency that the Democrats have a message for, should push it very hard. And, you know, the non-evangelicals, the people who don't, those women who don't vote on the issue of abortion or gay rights, that are actually economic, you know, voters, the Democrats have something to say to them. So they, I hope they're looking at that. I'm sure they are.
Heather Parton, Digby, you, I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but you are having your holiday fundraiser.
I am
at,
aware.
At digbysblog.blogspot.com at Hullabaloo. I cannot encourage people more to head over to your site and donate. You have been a really important voice for 15 years. I don't know how long you're, you've been had your blog.
Been 15 years.
And I'm so happy that you're there, and appreciate you coming on to this show. So folks can head over there. We'll put a link, obviously, in all of our descriptions. You just Google Hullabaloo or Digby's blog, and you will find your way over there. Heather, thanks so much. Have a great holiday season and happy New Year. I don't think we'll talk to you until January.
Oh, I'm sure. Thanks so much, Sam, and thank you for having me on the show and for having Majority Report right back at you. We've been at this a long time.
I know.
You know, it doesn't get any better, does it?
Well, it's hope springs eternal.
Crazier.
Hope springs
yes,
eternal.
Absolutely. Hey, all well, right. We're still here. So,
exactly.
Yeah. Anyway, happy holidays, everybody.
Bye-bye. Happy holidays, of course. Of course. Indeed. She can't bring herself to say Christmas. All right, folks, going to take a quick break. When we come back, Andy Kindler. Ladies and gentlemen, as you know, today is Friday. And on Fridays, one of the traditions that we have that usually falls this time of the year, somewhere very close to the equinox, is to have someone who is an esteemed expert on Dennis Miller on to make fun of him. And but before, of course, we do that, it is a tradition to play this.
With a Jew like Andy Kindler, you know you can't go wrong. His ancestors wrote the God Bless America song. A true Obama bot, Andy believes Obama can never be wrong. Yeah, AndyKindler.com. You made me laugh so hard, I had to write you your own theme song. Andy Kindler.
Andy Kindler. Andy, let me just say this in the hopes of starting a trend, reigniting a trend. What's up?
Oh, it's good. What do you think?
I think we're totally ready to bring it back.
Oh, okay. Man, that's the not. We're ready to bring it back. Not.
Oh, not.
Swing.
Not's awesome.
Swing.
Excuse me.
Wait, we gotta get. We gotta bring up another. Not gonna do it.
Not gonna do it.
Not
gonna pardon that kid that I set up in the crack deal.
And we're
not
doing the. We're doing Dana Carvey though. We're doing catchphrases.
Yeah, who we love.
I know.
You took it too
we
far.
Only want to do impressions.
I'm sorry.
We got to do more catchphrases. Old catchphrases.
It's not really old. I think.
Where's the beef? Where's the beef? Remember when Dukakis nailed the other person? I don't remember which one. Who did what to who?
It was Gary Hart said that to Mondale. Or Mondale said that to Gary Hart.
Where's the beef?
Yep, based upon that Wendy's ad. That's right. would the I can't. Yeah.
I can't believe I ate the whole thing.
At one point,
I can't believe I ate the whole thing.
20. Yeah. Like. Could have had a V8.
Ginger or Marianne was my favorite. That commercial. All right, I'm sorry. I apologize for me.
Me too.
The pivot to George H.W. Bush was not that bad.
To making fun of Dennis Miller, and thanks for joining us.
Right, yes. I do remember, though, like back in the early aughts, in the early 90s on Cross Comedy, nothing would trend at that point because it was much harder to do. But they were trying to get a push a cash phrase. The dishes are done.
That was the same time period where I was going with same old, same old.
Yeah, well, that was good. I mean, Keep on Trucking had some durability. Anyways,
shows to go, you
did not ever say that one.
All the young people are looking very confused right now.
Well, let me tell you guys, we didn't have memes when we were your age. We didn't have them. We had to do them audio-wise.
Word of mouth
it could
memes.
Only be audio, and it was an oral tradition of memes.
Half my act was jokes about vinyl records.
That must have been rough. When that.
What's up with these Edison spools?
Andy, let's start with this before we get on to the real festivities. What are you doing awake at 4 a.m, 5 a.m?
What was I doing? Oh, last night?
Yeah, I'm looking at my Twitter feed, and you were tweeting out at like 5 a.m.
Did Ricky Gervais
do something?
I'm probably
looking for a backhanded way to slam Gervais because I don't want to engage him anymore. I was Googling Dave Rubin because I love to hate that Dave Rubin.
But wait a second, honestly, do you stay up super super late just so that you can give grief to Ricky Gervais because he's on London time? Is that what's going on there? Like you stay up, to the wee hours of the morning so that you get him right around lunch in London.
Good morning, Ricky.
I blocked him. I blocked him a long time ago. Not that I don't still go and see what he's saying. But so I stopped engaging with him about a year and a half ago. And now I just look and see how if he's improved his stupidity.
Oh, my God. He.
You heard me.
Did he just. When did he do this? Oh, my God.
What's that?
He did this like within a day or two ago. He posted a picture of himself laughing, and he says, "This is me laughing at that thing you think no one should ever laugh about."
This is me destroying my legacy as the creator of The Office every single day.
Heading into the IDW, right? Like I'm laughing at something illicit.
I think he's a patron saint of the IDW. Can you hear me?
If you scroll one day on it, even like six or seven tweets, there's all these tweets from other accounts that praise him. Like he's retweeting them. Oh, what's this? I love Ricky Gervais more than life itself. What are they saying today? And then constantly, thank you, the biggest selling this. I got paid that. I'm the literally every day, if someone makes fun of him and goes, that's okay, I have a mansion, I'm rich, I'm wealthy, Netflix, $40 million. So it's hard to stay away.
Yeah, I understand. That must be very compelling. Andy, is there anything new that we should discuss before we get into the main event?
Yes, it is something very important that I never – I'm starting now to go heavy rotation of promoting my own podcast, which is called Thought Spiral with J. Elvis Weinstein. And it's you, me and him, two Jews, two mics, 2 hours, and it's ripping up. It's right next. It's just below Bagman on the top.
That is the Rachel Maddow. Now, is yours historically based, or is it really just like the history?
No,
it basically is whatever happened in the last half hour or 2 days.
I would love to hear Rachel Maddow on Andy's podcast.
No guests, too. Did I ask the question? Sorry. All right. No more. No MSNBC making fun of. We don't want to bite the hand that is currently feeding one of us.
Believe me, I'm not getting fed that much. Yeah. If that's what you're talking
He's
about.
He's not getting fed enough to fun of Chris Matthews.
Believe me.
I noticed that your suit your suit was like, I'm getting tired of having this dry cleaned.
That was actually the not so good sport coat the one.
You look good. You look
that
good.
Was at the office.
You actually grew up. You're an adult. I never. I'm outside the window looking in, Sam, trying to mainstream myself.
This is Rachel Maddow. God, I hate Ricky Gervais. He's so obnoxious. And he's always tweeting about stand-up. He's not even a real stand-up, is he, Andy?
No, he is not. No, he is not. But much like Hitler liked to show him at large rallies, he thinks it's hilarious to show him in a room of 50,000 people. Much like Hitler bragged about numbers.
I blocked Ricky Gervais so I'd stop thinking about him, but then I started following him on an incognito account.
Right, exactly.
Oh, that's great.
Yes, I can't bring myself to block him on my fourth sock puppet account that was set up to follow him. All right, so Andy, I got good news. Dennis Miller is back. He is back. And back with a vengeance. Andy, we have talked in the past a couple of weeks ago. Maybe it was a month ago. Maybe it was 2 months ago. I can't keep track of time. Time's dilating. We talked about Dennis Miller announcing that he wanted to get less political. And we are now all blessed with the fruits of that endeavor. He has gone on to Jimmy Fallon. Now, listen, I want you to just be calm, okay? Because these two together in the same sort of like clip could be too much for you. I don't want to be responsible for anything horrible that happens.
It's going to be, when he goes on shows now, it's always going to be casual Friday.
It's always. And, well, here's the thing. The first joke he tells is actually sort of funny. And he clearly, whoever, you know, somebody wrote that joke for him, and he said, and that was basically when he's like, I just need that one, and then I'll wing it myself. Here he is with Jimmy Fallon.
How many specials have you done, Stanislaw?
I've done 9 now. And,
is that right?
Yeah.
Nine specials.
Well, I...
Pause it. Can we just talk about how breathless... Jimmy Fallon, like 9.
So, Hitler, how many years you been in power for?
9. Oh, my gosh. That's one bigger than 8.
And Jimmy Fallon, you can tell, is in hyper-obsequious mode.
Yeah. What's that about? Why do you think that is?
He's trying to laugh because he knows he has no... He's probably afraid Dennis Miller's going to get political. He doesn't know what Dennis Miller's saying. He's just like, big fan. I don't know. It looked like he was disconnected and just told himself, I'm going to laugh at whatever Dennis says.
Big fan, please don't make fun of migrants getting killed on the border. That will make the Roots
9,
band upset.
And, yeah,
it's for you, 9 specials.
Well, listen, you've got the nightly gig, so you've got to work hard. But I've been branching out trying to do other things. I'm working on... writing some different kind of things. Like, for instance, tonight on the Hallmark Channel, I have a Christmas thing that I've written.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's about a very touching Hallmark Channel Christmas special about a blind teenager who self-pleasures while looking directly in an eclipse and he miraculously regains his sight. It's called a...
What's it called?
It's called a little something-something for Joey.
That's amazing.
Working on a reality show.
About hoarders. That was the peak.
Let me tell you something.
That's not a bad joke. I thought
it's
it was
coming back.
Bad.
No, but who's Joey? I don't even get the joke.
Who's
Joey? It's about jerking off into an eclipse. Do you really need any more content than that?
What's the joke?
I think there's some Christmas special with Joey, right? Or no?
A little something-something for Joey?
I'm Rachel Maddow. I'm writing a Hallmark
special
about
Joey Christmas?
A teen who jerks off until he regains his sight.
Well, I was expecting an actual joke when you guys said he started off.
Well, I think it's pretty funny.
There was no joke there at the beginning. Sam did a little mislead.
There you go. All right, but it gets better. Hold on.
Joey.
That's amazing.
Working on a reality show about hoarders with really impeccable taste. Quite frankly, they shouldn't throw
anything
out. No, you keep it all with that.
He's a great project.
Yeah, sure.
These are great.
Just a couple things.
Yeah.
Are
you going back on tour in February?
I'm going to go out with Mark Stein. He's a political commentator, but also a funny guy. We were sitting at dinner one night. He was making me laugh so hard. I said, we should go out together. So late February and early March, we're going to go out and try a few dates.
All right. Can we just pause it here? First of all, this is, you know, he's being jovial about it, but this is so sad. He's thrown over Bill O'Reilly for Mark Stein.
Who is Mark Stein? I would love if anyone knew who he was.
I'm so glad you said that,
Andy. People in media.
He is a... I think a British guy who lives in Canada, but
Canadian. He's literally, it's like Madonna. Like he studied there and got.
Okay. You got a weird accent. And, but the interesting thing about this guy is you have no idea who he is. He fills in for Limbaugh occasionally. He recently, through arbitration, through a mediated settlement with Mark Levin's, station, got $4 million because his show never got off the ground after a month or two. They had to pay him out $4 million. Now, it was an arbitration, and that means that he had some type of pay or play type of deal for $4 million. And unless that contract was for 75 years, there's no way that guy was going to generate $4 million. It's just an example of just right-wing money going dumped in there. But here we have some footage of Mark Stein. He did a music video called Putty Tat. It was about a cat. I am not kidding. Here it is.
Thank you.
The visuals are horrifying.
I thought I saw a pussycat a creeping up on me.
Should be just this video should just be like an Interpol red notice on child pornography.
I thought I saw a pussycat. I thought I saw a pussycat. I thought I saw a pussycat. I thought I saw a pussycat a creeping up on me. I did. I saw a pussycat as plain as he could be. He's watching you. That pussycat is very bad. He sneaks up from behind.
Okay,
you're right,
stop.
Wing. You
oh
can do anything.
Oh, my God. I didn't know it was going to be good. I love... Oh, you show me... Show me something where he's not hilarious and singing well.
You know, I'll tell you something. I know we played that like a couple of years ago, right? Or didn't we? And was it months ago?
Time's dilated.
But I got to say, like... It's gotten crazier since then. It has not aged well. I think things might have been just like we were so shocked by Trump that we watched that thing and it was all right, here he is.
It was always terrifying.
Well, that is here he is. He's got another one, and it also has to do with another cat. He's got some type of cat obsession. This is Mark Stein. She only talks that way to the cat is his song.
Oh, I love where his mind's going.
Snoozing on the sofa when she came in from work. She started baby talking and she sure didn't shirk. How's mama's pookie wookie? How's a big sweetie pie? I kinda smiled and I opened one eye.
Yeah, mama said shut up, right? She said shut up. Stop with the baby talk. Day.
I was just about to answer her when I heard her say, you so fat and lazy, but you're sweet as can be. That's when I knew she wasn't looking at me. Oh, oh, I wish she'd talk.
Okay, we gotta
to
stop
me.
This. I don't know.
Mark Stein is literally cucked by a cat.
But this guy must have had money beforehand, right? He's producing right. These videos. Like, what? I don't understand.
Is he William F. Buckley's son? No, that's it. No, I can't even believe it. What is category? What category would you put this entertainment in?
I
Well, the first one is creepy because it's a kid's song, but it's done in a creepy way. So is it meant for kids or who's it meant for?
I feel
the thought I saw a pewdie cat.
I feel like it's meant for Mark Stein and then everyone else who wants to look at it and go, what the hell is this?
It's my art.
And the second one, is it supposed to be self-deprecating? Because he should thank the woman for clearly working a job that allows him to nap on the couch all day under a bunch of newspapers.
Yeah, she only cares about the cat.
Well, it pays off, doesn't it?
So, anyways.
Did we cut before the punchline?
Well, the...
We
wanted to just give you a sense of who he's going
that.
On the road with. As you can see, this guy's a funny cat.
This guy's funny, just like you said. A political commentator, but also very funny.
Doesn't Bill O'Reilly have a right to be absolutely pissed?
If I'm Bill
O'Reilly...
If
you got ditched for that guy, that's the most insulting thing imaginable.
And
Bill O'Reilly
like,
may be a lecherous, almost certain... You know, rampant drunk, but he is a broadcast talent.
Do you think he's sitting in his in Bill O'Reilly sitting in his office right now? Just
the cat
you know,
guy.
Like,
the cat guy.
I've been stabbed in the back. What is it? What is the German thing? Gewalttätig.
The cat guy.
What is it?
He left me.
I'm
for the
strong.
Cat guy. Mark Stein.
No, he's saying someone get me Greg Gutfeld on the phone. I got to replace this guy.
All right, so here's Miller. We just took a little diversion there.
Political commentator, but also a funny guy. We were sitting at dinner one night. He was making me laugh so hard. I said, we should go out together. So late February and early March, we're going to go out and try a few dates in the Northeast Quarter. I think it's like Rochester, New York, and Syracuse. And yeah. And we'll
go fun.
Out. Although I just found out, well, I'm looking at the Syracuse ticket dates, and it's not selling that well. But the other three are doing well. I look at Syracuse. We're in the small town of Syracuse, and the same night they've booked us in there, Syracuse's college basketball team's playing Duke at the
It's
like me going into Duke Kabuki the day they signed the armistice or something. You know, it's just like the silliest booking.
Well, yeah, silly. But, well this will, guys, if you're in Syracuse, tape the game.
Yeah.
No one tell anyone, no spoilers, and go see Dennis Miller. Yeah,
hey, wait a second,
whoa,
Jimmy.
Whoa, oh, my God.
I signed up for alerts, and this one just came in. It's I get notification on what's going to happen that day for the Priyanka Chopra Nick Jonas wedding.
Wow.
And then tomorrow, Jim, we're playing Quidditch against Hogwarts, and it says here that it's not Muggle Quidditch, it's actual airborne because Nick got a trade out with NetJets. So
oh, my God, that is a great update that you're getting. This. Oh, my God. And that you get that,
oh my
and
God.
You write a little something for Joey. I mean, how do you even get to do that?
To me, it's a cornucopia.
Fallon looked like he is. Even Fallon can't fake laugh at some of this.
Exactly. The old, I'm getting alerts on my iPhone about Quidditch joke.
There's 144,000 people in Syracuse. Is that what he's claiming? He can't draw more than him in a basketball game?
I wonder how big of a room. Well, he's actually, he booked out a 25,000 person stadium.
Well, I mean,
Andy,
at least the Harry Potter reference is within this century.
If you could look at the faces on everyone in the studio, like Matt and Jamie in particular, just look so confused. Like, how is this like actual entertainment? And like, what? How did any of these people end up where they're supposed to be?
I'm not just doing politics anymore.
I'm doing really
bad
comedy.
I teamed up with a cool cat who does really bizarre cat videos, and for some reason, people prefer to see the Duke game.
It's a cautionary tale for all of us, isn't it?
Oh,
this
yeah.
could happen to all any of us.
Now, we also have, don't we have another clip of Dennis Miller on a different show? Are we done with that one? That one.
Wait, I had some. Did you do where he goes, the Rocket Raccoon is classic.
Oh, is that coming up next?
No, it's really not.
On Jimmy
who
Kimmel.
Who is Priyanka Chopra? Who's that? Who is that guy?
Who? Wait, what are you talking about?
It's somebody.
Priyanka Chopra, Nick Jonas.
Yeah, it must be somebody marrying one of the Jonas Brothers.
Oh my God!
Just give me some of the give me some names of new people.
He has a popular culture alert on Google.
Yeah, give me some names of new people. Oh, he continues
on. If you don't show any more from this, they do show a chunk from Dennis Miller where he does. You know, coming up next year, they're gonna have the Apple cufflinks.
Oh wait,
and then they're going to have the Apple catheter.
All right, we have more Fallon. We have more from Fallon. I didn't realize it went on for longer than that. Okay, here we go.
It's still going on.
Oh yeah.
I'm happy to have you here in the building in New York. Don't you love the city during the holidays, New York?
Beautiful, beautiful. I'm glad it's not snowing. De Blasio, not good with snow, obviously. I mean, it's like the Donner Party when it snows. You know, camp out at the bottom of the mountain and eat your kin.
Did he literally just say "huh" at the beginning of that premise?
I don't get the joke.
Bill de Blasio on the first snow, I think of the of his mayorality, because of I can't remember if it was a function of like a lot of the snowplow stuff had been privatized at that point, and. What happens is they're not exclusive to the city, and unless they get an order early, they don't. They go off and take other gigs. And so there was some talk that supposedly he didn't do the Upper East Side. I think remember
Bill de Blasio was like,
did he privatize the snowplows?
No.
Okay, so the joke doesn't make sense.
De Blasio would be like, yeah,
it's also
like fuck
2 years
Upper
old.
East Side.
Is that, it's Bill not de Blasio. This winter. Right? It's not this winter.
2 years old. No, this is like 5 years old.
No, that's 2013.
Yeah.
That's 2013 material, which, again, I think by Dennis Miller's standards is highly current.
I brought this into, is out of the aughts. I think I'm doing pretty good.
He's evergreen.
Yeah.
I'm back up. I'm refreshed and ready to go. I have references to 2010.
I got jokes so inside about Bill de Blasio, New Yorkers don't get it.
He saw that as like a tip of the hat to the old political comedian that he was.
Yeah,
that's what I used to do, stuff like de Blasio snow jokes. And now let me segue into my new family-friendly
Let's see
material.
What else he got.
I went over to Macy's.
Pause it. I would want to bet. Hold on. I would like go up to Jimmy Fallon right then and just walk across the stage and go, I will give you $500,000 if you could tell me what his what that reference was. And he would, even though he laughed as hard as he did, like he wouldn't be able to, for a moment, to even know what that was about.
Santa Claus was already up. And they made a weird choice this year. They've gone with Bernie Sanders as Santa Claus.
Interesting.
All the children line up. They get up there. Yeah. They hop up on his lap. Yeah. And then he tells each kid what he would like from them, which is
that's amazing.
A little bit of a different thing this
different,
year.
Different take, yeah.
It's a fucking socialism. Hate stuff.
Can
we take "that's amazing" as a drop, please?
That's amazing.
Oh, it's not clean. That's amazing.
Bernie Sanders is in the news again.
Because socialists take things.
Listen, the flight was lovely, but the plane made the ultimate mistake. It arrived early at the gate.
Oh, and, you know,
it's
worse.
Harder to get in to your airport when you arrive earlier at the gate than it is to get into the country. They take us all the way back out to the end of the runway. They turn off all the lights. You got to sit there. You can't move. I've got a weak bladder. I've got to go to the bathroom. So I'm waiting. You know, a guy goes in from row one, and I'm thinking, I've got to get in there. But I'm in row four, so I've got to look for a diversion. He comes out. I use that to take the, you know, flight attendant's attention away. Yeah. I go up. Boom. I'm in like a shot. I pull the door. Great, but then I realized that he has had what I can only assume is a silhouette altering bowel movement, and now I'm trapped in there, so I don't.
Silhouette altering.
Oh, this is incredible.
Oh, boy.
That is the most disgusting joke I've ever heard in my life. And then Jimmy's trying to justify it because he said silhouette. I literally can't believe he's doing an arrived at the gate early into bathroom junk.
I mean, bathroom humor is funnier than anything he's joked about so far, to be fair.
It's true.
It was a silhouette movement.
He took a huge poop and his shadow changed.
With it for half an hour. We start moving back to the terminal. I come out because you got to return to your seat, and I got to make that face like, you know, for all the people in the waft zone, don't look at me. You know, I didn't do it. It was just
waft zone. Good God.
The waft zone.
I like having you in the building. I feel like this is like... Well, have you been in, back to the...
I haven't been back in a long time, Jim. You know, we used to work with Saturday Night Live on 8, right?
Yeah,
and Letterman was here.
Yeah, Letterman was here.
Hard
when
to remember.
I did Saturday Night Live, Conan was here.
Yeah. And, you know, when I first saw you on Saturday Night Live, I thought, well, this is the guy who should do it. I mean, you were absolutely great at it. And I even remember at some point I was honored. I think you did an impression of me at some point.
Yeah, I did. Absolutely.
Do we have a photo of that? Or,
they have it, but I wasn't that good. Good.
Organic.
But I tried to do an impression of you. I'm a fan, so it was more. Yeah, I was honoring you.
I was a fan.
I was on SNL in the 90s. Last several years, I've been on YouTube channels complaining about Nancy Pelosi being a bitch.
Yeah.
So thank you.
How about Bill de Blasio?
How about Bill de Blasio in that snowstorm?
Right.
2013. Am I right?
Remember when
I'm
we?
Sure, that's
have
still
snow?
In the top of everyone's minds.
I haven't seen a misstep like that since Mario Procaccino made an offhand comic to John Lindsay back when A Beam came down from the back.
He could have, I mean, he wouldn't because he's so far right, but I mean, he could have taken some type of, he could have taken an Amazon shot at de Blasio. It's current. Everybody would have liked it.
No.
But he wouldn't do that.
Never in a million years.
He loves him. Yeah, yeah.
He could have taken a current shot. And I'm unbelievable. This is the greatest thing I ever saw. I saw it last night in chunks. Oh.
Here we go.
So great.
Yeah. Right. I don't know.
I've never seen Dennis Miller do an impression.
Like, Cadge it out of me if you try.
What do you guys think?
What a nice try.
Cadget out
I
of
do
them.
Rocket
Cadget.
Raccoon from Guardians of the Galaxy.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right, let's hear it.
Ready? Where's my camera there?
Yeah.
Yeah, just
the old
I'm fly in from California to New York to do a raccoon impression.
Oh, it's so you. I love it.
Thank you, Jimmy.
Why you
so
I want
you.
What
was
I didn't understand what just happened.
Okay.
Are we supposed to know who Rocket Raccoon is?
Well, I thought you would, though. I thought that was a current reference, maybe.
No, I know who it is. It was a it was a movie. It's actually, we're in, I think, the third iteration of that movie. And kids know it. And he was going to do an impression and then said, nah, I'm joking.
Yeah, because he was saying, that's the, of course, that is the ultimate. And they say, I'm a comedian's comedian. This guy's really tearing it apart.
But tearing apart.
Watch the cut here by the crew.
Yeah, just not going to fly in from California to New York to do a raccoon impression.
Oh, it's so you. I love it.
It was so you, the way you were going to do an impression, and then you blew it off for no reason, and it wasn't funny.
So they cut this. They cut this out. Now, as you know, Andy, this show is not live. They air it. They shoot it around 5 or 6, and then they air it later that night. They cut after Fallon says it's so you, and then they cut to Dennis Miller just going like, what? Really?
Like, flying you to New York to do a raccoon impression.
Oh, it's so you. I love it.
Why
you? I want when you meet who you think they are.
Now, well, listen,
I've been a fan of yours forever.
I love that, sweetie, Jim. When I watch you, I always think you seem to inhabit when you were on Saturday Night Live doing the news. And I thought this kid's, was it a dream of yours or would,
yeah,
yeah, like when you were young?
I could. I watched every Saturday Night Live, I was religiously. That's the only thing I ever wanted to do. I just loved it so much.
I remember when it happened for me, I was writing jokes in Pittsburgh. I was working at a comedy club. And a kid came into town. I won't say his name, but he bought some jokes off me. And then I went back to my apartment. I'm living in this crap $60 a month apartment with a hot plate, you know, I'm eating ramen off a double album cover. And I'm sitting there and I'm watching this guy on The Tonight Show with Johnny. And he tells a joke that I've written. And Johnny Carson, like, falls out, and I'm sitting there leading the crappiest life imaginable. Yeah. I don't know about you. At that point, I thought I have to become the conduit for these jokes, even though I was reticent up front. You know, yeah. I was kind of shy about doing it. But it's sort of like living in East Berlin, and you're walking on your side of the wall, and they're shooting snitches, and on the other side of the wall, you know, they're playing racquetball,
snitches?
And everybody's getting laid. You think I gotta
pause it for one second? Well, now, just if you don't know, the wall came down 25 years ago.
I'm a raconteur.
And not to be pedantic about it, but people definitely got laid more on the east side of the wall. They've done studies.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Women had more orgasms.
Oh, you... I didn't know that. I just see. Maybe it was. Maybe it's not so bleak in North Korea.
We should say we have an update. A little something-something for Joey... Something for Joey was a made-for-TV movie about John Cappelletti, a Penn State football player who gave his Heisman Award to his brother Joey, who was dying of leukemia. That was from John Ferson on Twitter. We should also tell you that movie was made in 1975.
Oh, so Jimmy Fallon is fake remembering the reference?
I'm sure Jimmy Fallon remembers a movie from when he was one. A made-for-TV movie
show
from when he was one.
Before Dennis comes on, like, all right, Jimmy, like, here are the references. They range from
I'm sure Jimmy does a lot of show prep.
1960 to 1977.
Yeah. 1975 reference. That was 40 years ago.
I love the look on Jimmy Fallon's face when you can almost see him going, What am I fake laughing at now? I don't even know. I'm confused. I need more focus for my fake laugh. Yeah. I know it's not funny, but there's got to be a way in from why I'm cackling.
Exactly. Wait, I got to wrap this around. Oh, something for Joey.
That's so you. It's so you.
Yeah, that was. I enjoyed that moment when Dennis was like, wait, what, really? All right, I guess, okay. Mental note, got to go that direction with more. Got to do that more.
You
less
mean
references.
Being
more
sort of sad and down.
More pretending I'm going to do an impression.
That's the new thing. I'm going to pretend that I'm going to do an impression.
He's so delightful now. That's the thing. Now that he's gone away from the politics, you can just see the pure joy that Dennis has with life, and he just wants to communicate it.
That's true. It really comes across.
He was laughing with Mark Stein at dinner, and how can you not? And he said, let's go out together. Where are we going? Rochester, Ithaca, Utica, and Elmira just dropped out, cha-cha.
Can you imagine them sitting at the table together, maybe singing back and forth like a duet to "I Thought I Saw a Pussycat"?
This is incredible, the cat material. We got to book a room in Kingston ASAP. This is going to light up an audience in Central Islip.
I just got a booking. We're going to have to shoot down to Pennsylvania, but on I-80 in between Pittsburgh and Philly, I got a truck stop. It's huge. No sporting events for miles.
Hey, this is the only time I've laughed while I've eaten since 1993. Let's go out.
Although, to be fair, I mean, just think of the poor Syracuse undergrads that are like, I can't miss Syracuse and Duke. That's going to be an incredible game. But God damn it, Mark Stein and Dennis Miller.
How many times is
night?
These guys are only coming twice this year to Syracuse.
Yeah, and Dennis Miller is the Zion Williamson of comedy.
But so. But I want to just like break this down for a moment. I want to break this.
Wait, I missed him. I missed the reference.
Zion. Now
he's a really good Duke player.
Oh, okay.
I'm the Jason
this.
Kidd of comedy.
Three
current
weeks
reference.
Ago or a month ago, there's a story in the Wall Street Journal. He wants to get away from politics.
Out of politics and into the arms
out
of Mark
politics.
Stein.
And into he's going on tour with Mark Stein. Like, you got to ask yourself, like, does the guy not know anybody? Like, is no one else eating lunch with him that he can't?
Yeah, clearly. He's like, the only, I mean, look at this. This whole interview.
You can't
I mean,
even get Greg Gutfield to go on
there's
tour.
There's always pathos with Miller because this whole interview, as big as much of a just massive asshole he is, I go through this interview and I'm like, this is so sad. This clearly
yeah,
is some type of favor called in. He gets an opportunity to be back in the big leagues, but his switch to baseball analogies. His throwing arm is just off.
Right.
It isn't happening. Fallon clearly, I can tell through his nice guy shtick, he resents having to struggle this much to pretend it's funny. And and it's just so much pathos, man. I mean, and then it's like, yeah, I want to get out of this politics. Let me call my good show business buddies up. And you end up with a favor delivered by Fallon and a tour with Mark Stein, which is a downgrade from Newsmax Bill O'Reilly.
I think that somebody probably went to Fallon and said, look, Jimmy, someday it could be you. And you got to give.
I probably will.
You give now. To get back from the Jimmy of
you think
you, know.
You think Fallon? I don't think it'll be politics though. It'll just be sort of like a general. It'd be really funny if Fallon all of a sudden just becomes incredibly hostile. Like a tank. yeah, you know, fuck you.
Right.
He like washes Trump's hair in like another episode.
Andy,
what if he just started mussing everybody's hair up very aggressively and angrily?
Or starts like,
remember when I had a career?
Grabs
until I went this
pulls
and did
it
this?
Out. Pulls it out. Andy.
Yeah.
I cannot tell you how happy I am that you have joined us repeatedly in the year 2018. I think you have made it a much easier year to get through. I don't know why I want to put it in that way, that we all have to get through a year.
Well, everyone, I have to say, everywhere I go, and I'm not just blowing smoke up my own schmadoopy, but everywhere I go, people tell me they love.
You're
to,
blowing
to,
your
they love
smoke,
the show.
So much smoke
they
up your schmadoopy, your silhouette has changed.
I was in the WAP zone of Kindler's
so,
schmadoopy.
So large, The Matrix 3 came out.
Well,
I haven't seen that big a WAP zone since.
It's great to have you. Now, we should give you tour dates. Utica. Ithaca.
I'll be in
Syracuse.
And any concern about the Syracuse Duke game?
I'm going to be in Binghamton, but not when the Binghamton Colonials are playing the Hofstra Nunchucks. So I should be able to draw.
You don't want to be up there where Iona Gaelics are up there playing. Andy.
I love you guys so much.
Have a happy
and
New
I really
year.
Appreciate you having me on this year. And it's really been
thoughts
the great.
Pile.
I mean, yes, I have to get up way earlier than I normally would, West Coast time. 9:30 sometimes I have to get up.
No, I know. I
but I really
that.
Have loved it. I love it.
All right. Well, we love you. Thank you so much, Andy. Have a great New Year. Talk to you soon.
Love you too.
Andy.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye, guys.
All right, folks. That is the second to last Free Friday show of the year. Live.
Writing a Hallmark series. I'm liking this Rachel Maddow, Dennis Miller.
30% off Just Coffee ends on Tuesday. So head there. You don't even need a coupon. JustCoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. This is the time to try out the coffee, folks. This is the time to try it out. Also, support this program by becoming a member. Join themajorityreport.com. Today is Friday. Now I remember, Michael, you were sick on Tuesday, but you made it in
Sure
for TMBS. How did that go?
Tanned, relaxed, and rested.
It was so weird how healthy you were.
Yeah, no, I was feeling pretty good. Matt Taibbi was in.
Hair blown dry.
Yeah, everything was great. I got it. It was a spa day. Matt Taibbi came in. We talked about Facebook, the Assange case, why if he's charged, you need to care, even if you don't like the guy.
Now, wait a second.
Yes.
I did not catch that segment. What if he's charged for something that has nothing to do with his work before that? It has exclusively to do with stuff that took place since, let's say, 2016.
What stuff? Oh, well, look, if he's charged with, I mean, specifically, we were saying if they choose to charge
enticing leakers,
that was the specifics of the conversation.
Oh,
it was
not charged with
anything ever writ large.
My sense is
what was released in that accidental filing a couple of weeks ago. If that is real, that's very disturbing.
Well, what was released in that accidental filing? His name was just in there.
I thought it was more
procedural.
Well, I mean, people like Greenwald and Taibbi, who follow this closely, are very concerned about the enticing.
I saw an exchange with Taibbi and Marcy Wheeler about that. And I have a feeling that Marcy Wheeler knows something about this dynamic that maybe some of us don't.
We shall see. We talked about that. And actually, in fact, I think...
But I agree with the premise that,
yeah, I mean,
that
I,
the earlier
some ways,
stuff
applies beyond Assange. And we also talked about the definitely applies beyond Assange. And we talked about the Trump and Obama administration's wars on journalism. The problem with how Facebook's because there isn't regulation, the models that they're doing to clamp down on fake news is going to basically undermine dissenting voices. A bunch of other stuff. Then on some deep dive coverage on Macron this Sunday for patrons, an illicit history of Beto O'Rourke with Liz Brunig, and get the whole thing, patreon.com/TMBS and Michael Brooks Show on YouTube and iTunes.
Jamie.
Yeah, so this week on the Antifada, we talk with Justin Akers-Chacon about how the criminalization of migration has only ever served to hurt the workers and help the bosses, which ties in with a lot of what you and Digby were talking about earlier. And we also talk a little bit about the Yellow Vest movement in France and how Macron is just a psychotic neoliberal shitbird.
I don't know.
Literary Hangover, we did Democracy in Chains. Tonight, we're recording on Anne Bradstreet, the first poet of America, really. Well, maybe not the first poet, full stop, but definitely the first female poet and probably the first notable one. And also, if you watch it on YouTube, those are coming up to just a little bit of a lag for computing power, but check it out, YouTube, Literary Hangover.
There you go. Wait, well, lag for what?
YouTube for Literary Hangover.
Wait, what did you say before that? Computering power?
Lag.
A lag.
Yeah, there's a lag.
Not a leg. A lag.
Lag.
I never heard that.
Leg.
I never heard your accent before.
Really?
I never heard his accent before.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Most people find it very charming.
I'd never
definitely
heard. They are paying to hear him read them books in that accent.
I had never heard it before. Wow. I had no idea what you were talking about. Leg. All right. See you in the fun half.